Welcome to the Mug Meeting Summaries podcast. I'm Gilbert Dutilleux. The first of our mini topics for the January meeting was Hardcore SSH, presented by Sean Cody.
Hardcore SSH. My apologies to the hardcore logo people. I don't know why that came into my head. So basically, I'm going to go over a couple of things that are very well hidden in the OpenSSH man page that are exceedingly useful and difficult to get at the same time, but infinitely helpful. If I seem tired, it's because I am. But start with something a little lighter. So one thing that's forgotten about SSH is that when you launch the process, it's not a single process. You're launching a pair, or at least at minimum a pair of processes. You launch a control session. The control session establishes your TCP flow and then launches a pseudo-terminal if you choose. That control session can be used for all kinds of things. And it is what you interact with. It passes all of your input back and forth to the pseudo-terminal. You can get into that control session and do some stuff after you've initiated the session to change some things or force disconnect, or there's a couple features we'll go over. So we just went over that. What's a good way to? It's sort of like a backdoor. You can get to it by escape characters, or in Telnet you could use control open square bracket to break in. Like if you're familiar with older, very old machines, where you'd have to break into the firmware on boot, sort of like the F2, but in the old Unix world. I guess even still AIX still does that. Well, you can do the same thing with your SSH sessions, and by default, the escape character is the tilde character, top left-hand corner of any keyboard, any normal keyboard. You can change it as well if that overloads some feature you particularly need, but I've never had to do that. So this is very helpful. Like if someone gives you a shell to do something for them and you don't want to keep bothering them to log back in, or you don't want to keep asking them for things but you want to be able to change the session without closing it, this can be very helpful. There's a very limited number of things you could do. Not all of them are super helpful. Some of them are kind of confusing. Like for instance, I don't know why you would want to rekey a session when it does it automatically. But the disconnect is a pretty useful one. Like if you've lost TTY for some reason, like you've set an option in your shell or something broke, and you want to disconnect the connection cleanly. Cleanly is the operative word there. Like you just don't want to forcefully tear down the TCP session, but you want to tell the control session, please stop, reset, exit. You can use the tilde period. When you're in, you can, if you just need a listing of these options, the tilde question mark. The background is kind of useful, but the tilde ampersand is even more useful for if you've got things like forwarded connections or tunnels or some other magic that you've opened up in the background and you don't want that to go away, especially if you're using, you're multiplexing your control session. The first in, last out rule applies, so you have a bunch of windows open, you're sharing the control session. Well, the very last one will have to exit, and if you kill that one, all of your sessions will go away, because you're killing the control session. Break, so some platforms will implement their ILOM over SSH, so they've got the little ILOM card, like lights out management, and instead of serial, they've got a little processor on it that runs a mini operating system with SSHD, and sometimes you need to send break. Typically, Spark is where you hear break the most. I think that's the only place that I've ever seen it used.
Dell does the same thing now.
Dell does it now? Okay. Minus R, or sorry, tilde R, I really have no idea when that's useful. If somebody does, I'd like to hear it. The two most useful to me are the last two, the show forwarded connections and open the command line. Forwarded connections are things like if you have port forwards enabled, and you had a nice giant command line or use an alias you're in, you don't know what you forwarded or what sessions are active in your control session, you can use that escape clause to list them. And then if you want to, this is the cool part, if you want to change forwards while you're in a session without closing and restarting, you can go into the command line and run a set of neat options. So when you get into the command line, you get a little prompty thing. So if you've ever seen that SSH greater than thing, you've escaped into your control session. Your pseudo terminal is still open, but you're now talking to the SSH process and not the pseudo terminal across the wire. In here, you can do your forwards, so like minus L for local, minus R for remote, minus D for dynamic. You can also kill existing forwards. So if you got one hanging for some reason and you just want to kill it out, minus K and then the same thing. So if you had port 80 to localhost forwarded, you do minus K L localhost colon 80. And that would close that port forward, and any existing connection will just sever it, and then you can re-enable it from here. If you've got a particular option in your config called commit or permit local command, if you remember from old FTP, you're able to like LCD to do local commands while you're in session. It's the same thing. When you have like these nice GUIs and terminal multiplexers, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to use. But you know, sometimes it could be useful, and basic help is there too. Let's just do a little mini demo of that. So, here's my config. Nothing really fun in there. I have permit local command in there specifically just to show this. But for the most part, and I'm too lazy to search and type, apparently. So it's just a random machine on the internet. So we'll go into help. And it shows you all of the possible options. Now, this is coming from the local process. This isn't like data crossing the wire. so in this case, if we want to, let's just open the command line. And minus L, mug, or actually we'll do minus R, because that won't work. Mug.me.ca 80. Oh. How did I do that?
You need to give a local port.
Oh, right. Thank you. I am tired. Okay.
So when you do the tilde, like, what is protecting it from accidentally breaking into the control session? Timing.
Timing and state. So if there is no input, you can break out. But if you're in the middle of typing something, you're not going to break into the control session. So if you're stuck where you couldn't get into it, just hit enter a bunch of times to reset the input buffer. Mm-hmm. And when the input buffer is empty, that's when you can control it.
Okay. But is there a timing break, just like Adam said? Okay.
The second character must follow the tilde within, I think the default is a quarter of a second.
Okay.
I've Something not like timed that. But that's interesting. So in this case, without killing my session, I forwarded local 80. Let's see if that actually works. Nope. Okay. So, let's see what I did wrong. So the reverse port forward didn't quite work. Alright, so I'm not going to debug that for now. I'm too tired to figure that out. But, let's kill out of that.
Oh, what you wanted here was minus L for the way you were testing it.
Can you forward 80 as non-root?
You want to set up a local port 80 forwarded
right,
to
right.
that on the destination.
Well, let's do it.
Minus R would set up port 80 on
the reverse
your yeah. SSH destination.
Yeah. Oh, that would be kind of funny. so yeah, minus L 80. Fine, be that way.
Or the other one, 8080.
The first one should be 8080.
I was going to sudo it. But there we go. So, take a look. I have no forwards enabled. 880. There we go. Test HTTP by hand. Boom. There you go. So that's local. Let's enable the connection. So there you go. And from here I can kill it by... Oh, yeah. I'm obviously not at my best today. Not supported. Great. Anyways, in theory, you could have killed that session running. But note that every time, like, if I connect it again... Here, I'll just do it on another screen here. Apparently not. Okay. Just doing it again. Now I've got two of them. So if you do it a bunch of times, again, you have a more fine-grained control of how of your forwarding, and that includes local, remote, and dynamic. So it's a particularly fun piece of trivia that's buried in the man page. So let's, if I can remember what I'm doing. Where's my mouse? Here it is. Okay. So now let's talk about VPNs, virtual private networking. Yeah, excuse to play with the feature. So, what do I mean by VPN? Well, I don't mean forwarding. VPNs technically mean you are connecting two networks to each other via some secure medium. Come in all kinds of flavors, colors, and methods. Essentially, what you're doing is you're taking a network or a host and attaching it to another network and routing. The routing part is key here because it's an actual network as opposed to a forward, right? You're not proxying, you're attaching a remote network or device to a disparate network somewhere else. So you need to have specific addressing, and that's probably the best way I can explain it. They all come in many different ways. Most TCP, UDP, every flavor you could possibly imagine. They're all doing some form of network routing. And OpenSSH is within version 5.something or other, allowed you to funnel traffic, now that's Ethernet traffic or point-to-point, over a tunnel device through a control session. So essentially you're creating a virtual adapter on both sides and telling it all the input and output, funnel it through my control session through a special tunnel that I've created and pop it out the other end. Now, what's really nice about this is that you can do layer 2 or point-to-point, meaning if you do layer 2 or Ethernet forwarding, all of your ARP traffic, like it's like you're attaching to a local switch. And if you route appropriately, you can set yourself up just like you would from some commercial VPN product. Right? You attach to a network, you can get access all subnets you have routes for. And vice versa, you can attach routes on a disparate network over the tunnel through your network, essentially creating like ad hoc VPNs wherever you go with very little configuration, as opposed to ISA KMP, which is massively complicated, or OpenVPN, which is massively complicated but for another reason. So this is not a forward. We're not proxying at all. We are routing. We are taking all traffic and routing it over a tunnel. So when you try doing tunnels and VPNs, you get two different kinds of things. You hear people talking about tunnels and taps. Especially with OpenVPN, you see tun and tap used interchangeably. In this case, we're talking about a tunnel, which is a device set up to funnel traffic. A tap is a virtual Ethernet adapter that you apply some random configuration connect to a network. It's a very subtle difference, but in most cases, you're looking for tunnels, not taps. In Windows, it's a little more complicated in that there are no tunnel. There's no possible tunnel devices in Windows. You can only do taps, meaning you have to add a virtual adapter and bridge that to an existing adapter to make a VPN work. the concept of a bridge tunnel doesn't exist in Windows, which is why this doesn't work in Windows. So it's pretty simple to set up on the server side. This is like the easiest VPN thing you can set up on the server end. You only specifically need two lines. Like, if we're not going to talk about addressing and routing, all you need to do is enable the permit tunnel option and then turn and then tell SSHD to start it. Don't pkill hop SSHD if you're SSH'd into the host. The P is the problem because it greps, does PS, greps through it, sends that signal to all SSHD processes. I did that at 2:30 in the morning. And I'm like, I killed a machine in Los Angeles. Luckily, I had out-of-bound management, so I could fix it for this talk. But SSHD minus T is your friend as well. Does the whole, does my configuration look sane before doing what you ask it to do? On the client side, pretty much every Unix has some version of a tunneled adapter. It's been in BPF forever. If you're on the Mac, Apple doesn't include a tunnel device by default. I don't know why, but they just don't. So you can get this TunTap kernel extension that someone just ported over and created a kernel extension for it. It's literally the same code from the FreeBSD networking stack, just made a kernel extension. In Snow Leopard, you need to also update OpenSSH, because this is a relatively new feature. Snow Leopard was kind of behind the times when it came to shipping OpenSSH. But all other Unixes just work that have a recent version of OpenSSH, like 5.4 or better. So, like, if you have an old HP UX, well, you have your own problems. So, just to give a little picture of what we're trying to do. So, we've got a little laptop on the left, and we've got a disparate network across the internet on the right. We're going to assume that our router is not the firewall. It doesn't really matter for this case, but in many cases you've got a router, firewall before you have routers and then some network. I didn't want to say the firewall was the router to confuse things. It really doesn't matter. You're just punching through it with SSH. So you establish your SSH session, a little, nice little gray arrow there. Then we create a tunnel device across the session. It has nothing to do with the network at all. We are saying, in my control session, I'm going to create a special device called a tunnel. And on each side, it'll create a tunnel device, assuming both sides support it. So SSH knows about tunnels and creates them. Then you have to set up addressing and routing. So you have to connect yourself to that tunnel. That's what the little red arrow little means. And then we want to route traffic across that tunnel. Notice that it's not going through the control session. It's going through the same TCP flow, but it's a very separate process. So and just running it, like these it's only a couple commands, but the problem is the concepts is kind of difficult. When this first came out, I fought with it for about 3 weeks and then gave up. And it took me about a year before it just kind of clicked. And then when it finally clicked at 2 in the morning about 4 months ago, a couple months ago, I was like, holy crow, I had no idea I figured it out. And then I understood what I did the next day. So the only option you really need to know here is the minus W. The minus W is the specific flag that enables the tunneling. And the parameter you give it is the client tunnel number and the remote tunnel number. Now, every device you have, like ETH1, GIF 1, whatever device, run 1, every device has a number. That's what those numbers are. So if you have 17 different people wanting to use this, you'll have 17 different tunnels, and you have to specify accordingly. So on the client side, you'd have tunnel 0, but on the remote side, since I've set myself up on tunnel 6, I'd have to have 0:6.
You can't have SSH and SSHD pick them from what's available. You have to explicitly
you have specify. To. They are they become physical interfaces in the kernel.
Right.
So there's no automatic stuff. And you kind of don't want that because you'll mix them up. And I'll show you when we create that last, when we assign the IP at the bottom there, notice ifconfig ton zero. By default, SSH will create them if you're allowed to. And you assign your IP and the other side of the connection. In this case, it's a very small slash. I don't know what a slash is, but it's essentially two IPs. Yours and the remote side. And you're setting up a small Ethernet network between just those two IPs.
Slash 30, okay.
So in this case, I'm using 172.16.0.1. That's the client side, and on the server side, it's .1. On the client side, it's .2. And on the reverse, when you're on the server, you'll notice the same thing. It's that you just swap the IPs.
So by naming your initial port 0 on the client side, you've created the ton 0 name or device?
SSH, OpenSSH was kind enough to create them on both ends.
Okay.
You can specify like 17.6, and it will create them on either side. You have to be root for that, but we'll get into that in a bit. So now we've got an SSH control session set up, a tunnel set up, and two tunnel interface devices created on each side. And they're addressed. But now we can talk between those two hosts, but you also have to add routing after that. So it depends on your network. In this whole configuration, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to add routes because there is only one host on the remote side and on the client side. But let's just say you have your internal network at the office is 10/8. You establish the route here, route add 10/8. The remote gateway, which is the other side of the tunnel, and on the reverse, you say anybody that wants 172.16.0.1. Well, throw that over on the tunnel interface on the remote side. You can also set your default route to be the other side of the tunnel, thereby making it a more traditional VPN. In this case, we're only specifically putting some flows through that new route, through that new interface. Others will go through your normal default gateway. By making it your default route, everything is encrypted and looks like it's coming from the other side of the network. Not all operating systems deal with setting your default gateway well. OpenBSD does it fine, and I didn't want to bring that extra laptop with me. The Mac, I can't figure out how to do that, so you have to use static routes. When I set the default route on the Mac, it kills the initial control session. Because it's not using... The way it should work, in theory, is that you've got your first default gateway will persist. You add another default gateway. You'll send traffic. If it fails, it'll go back to the initial default gateway. It's not working that way on the Mac for some reason. But on OpenBSD, it works fine. FreeBSD, it works fine. Couldn't figure out the Linux commands because they changed from the standard ifconfig stuff and route add.
For the Mac users in the crowd, the reason it doesn't work on the Mac is macOS's version of Network Manager.
Okay.
It's doing things on the fly behind the scenes for you because it's smarter than you.
It probably is. A caveat for this is not like, you know, OpenVPN or Cisco VPN where you DH client across, you get an IP, you get remote configuration, you get all this other happy fancy stuff for users. And it's not scalable because you have to create a tunnel device and manage a tunnel device for every user using it. So this is the kind of thing you would use for, I have a router in a remote office and we didn't buy remote VPN clients or concentrators for that office. I need some way to get in without port forwarding. If you do port forwarding and you have more than one host, well, if you're doing, let's just say, 10 servers on RDP, then you've got 3309, 3310, 3311, and you have to manage that. In this way, you set up routing, so you don't have to worry about that. You just IP, port, you're done. If I had to do this stuff on a daily basis, this would save my life. But if you have to do it on a larger scale, use a proper VPN tool like ISA KMP or Cisco or OpenVPN if you're so inclined. Now you might want to go, but I kind of need root to create devices. Yep, you know, it is a drawback. I didn't say this was for everybody. But the way around that is you just say you allow root logins, but with forced commands. So you have to set up authorized keys. which is sort of just cleaning up the configuration. In this case, for each of the tunnels, instead of creating them by hand each time, you can go in OpenBSD anyways, you create interface configurations for each of the tunnel devices, and under, and if you notice, I've just got, this works for OpenBSD, so Linux, everything else will be different, but in this case, I am setting the IP, then the remote gateway, and the 31-bit net mask. I don't have to put that, but it makes things clear. And at the bottom, I'm adding the routing. So if I had other things on it... Okay, cool.
5 minutes. That's
cool. Then you use the authorized keys. Notice that I have tunnel 1 there. That tells SSH which tunnels I'm using, or which to assign. And SHETC net start, and then use the user's SSH key to authenticate against. So that's more of the VPN stuff. We can go over multiplexing. This is another reason to why control sessions are awesome. So you can use this your one control session to open up as many shells as you want, and they still go through the same TCP flow. So you're not opening up the extra TCP overhead for every new session. They're all sort of combined into one control session. It's very useful where you have very small CPU use, like old Sparks or whatever. Crypto takes forever to come up with new prime numbers to encrypt with. Well, you only have to have one control session, one encryption set. You have compression over that, you're good. You can have as many shells open as you want, and you're not wasting any extra network bandwidth that you don't have to. And you're a lot nicer to the remote side. I discussed this like a long, long time ago when I did the bigger SSH talk, but it's become much easier to use now. And it's essentially you add three lines to your SSH config on the client side. The host, and then that little asterisk just says everything, because I'm lazy, but you put host names that you want to do the multiplexing on. And control master just says, if I don't have a connection, in auto means if I don't have a connection, or a control socket, make one, and the control path is the socket. So when it creates the socket, you'll see /temp, and then that's just the format. That's just a file in /temp for the control session. So if things go really, really wonky, and I need to tear everything down, just remove the control socket, and everything goes away. This is where that tilde ampersand comes in handy. So if you've got a bunch of sessions open with one control session, you can background the control session and not worry about closing it by accident. So I guess we'll do a little quick demo of the... Can I steal a little bit of your time, dude? Cool. So let's do it on this side. So I'm just going to ad hoc a lot of this. Or not. W00. No interface on this side. So go in. Oh, great. Okay, I'm just going to nuke this orbit here. Try again. Alright. So now, learn to type. Good, great.
That's on your crapple. That's on your crap.
Yeah, it should have created
the... You were logged into Sean on the other one.
I know why it didn't work. And notice it says, here you go, tunnel device open failed. You know why that I did that? Nope.
You're not root?
Because I'm not root. Oh, what? Known hosts. Oh, of course, that one. Because it's like the only server I use. Okay. Alright. So now we should have a tunnel device. What?
Because you're not SSHing from your local machine.
Yeah, you were logged into a machine.
Oh, nice. I'm creating... Oh, that's ugly. Yeah. This
sudo.
Is what happens when you don't sleep.
Sudo!
Thank you.
Yeah.
I am not at my best, obviously. There we go. Yep, I'll be fine. No, it's just taking a while. There we go. Now we have a tunnel device set up.
Oh.
And it has an MTU. So we're good. So it's an actual Ethernet interface.
I feel the need to be pedantic here.
Sure.
Because of the flag point-to-point on TUN0, mm-hmm. it technically does not have a subnet mask.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yes, because I set permit tunnel to yes. I could say permit tunnel to Ethernet, and that will go away, and then routing or subnet. Subnetting will make sense.
Point-to-point is the far better option, if it's supported.
Yeah. So, on the server side, TUN0, 172.16, 0.1172. It doesn't really matter here. 0.2. And then as long as I swap it on this side, 2. Yes. Control A is not working for me today, I don't know. So there we go. We've got a point, 2 point. Tunnel set up. And when I use the little escape thing to tell me what forwarded sessions are open, well, we've got a tunnel set up. That's what this little TUN session here. I can create a bunch of them if I wanted to, but I don't really know why you would do that. One is enough. So I should be able to ping the remote PSI right now. Yep. So this traffic is not going out my default gateway. It's going through the tunnel, then through the SSH session, which goes through the default gateway. So we can prove that by going to localhost 80. Oh, no. 172.16. There you go. So then it should load the same thing as... Yeah. So the traffic is forwarding. I could add a static route. I don't know if I should try this. Unfortunately, it won't help. Let's do ipchicken.com. So, sudo route add 209, yeah. /32 to 172.16.0.2. Is that what I did? No. Alright. So, now ipchicken.com should give me an address of 174.136, that's my server IP for the VPN tunnel I created. And if I remove that static route, route delete, we'll reload. Now it'll go through my default gateway, and I get IBM's IP. So we're actually funneling traffic through it and routing properly. So you could set up, sort of like, you know, when you set up Tor, you're going through the little Tor cloud. Well, I've created my own little cloud that I can control end-to-end. So this is kind of slick, and for places like DEF CON, where you don't want anything in the clear, yeah. You can set up yourself a little VPN to a machine that you know and you can secure, and you're good to go. So tearing it down is very simple as well. You just essentially log out. On the TUN TAP device on the Mac doesn't quite work so great, so it just sits there and hangs. But when I kill it, it will kill the tunnel on the other side. You can make these things persist if you want, but it's just one of these really weird tricks that can be very helpful. I'll leave it at that. And if you have questions, I think it's best to email me.
So you can answer when you're awake tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Sean.
Can you install like X Windows via SSH? You know, I got it working in text mode, and I'm trying to figure out how to get graphics. Any suggestions?
You do VNC over the tunnel you create. That's one way.
There's a couple of options. You have to install the X Windows software on. You're talking on the remote server that you're SSHing into. You have to install the X clients, at the very least, on the remote server. using whatever the OS tools are, whether it's Yum, ABT, what have you. If you're running X locally on your local workstation, you can do what's called X11 forwarding. That's built into SSH.
Mine's capital X.
Yeah.
And I'll set it up for you.
It's not always allowed by default. You can always go edit the config file and just uncomment the line that allows it.
Add stuff like .xauthority and...
No, you don't do any of that stuff yourself with SSH. And then if you've got X forwarding allowed, and you do SSH, as Sean just said, dash uppercase X, which is X11 forwarding. Again, you can edit the config file, turn that on by default, but whatever. You SSH into the remote machine, you log in, you run an X11 program on the remote machine, it'll just show up on your local workstation, in theory. There's a lot of gotchas that can prevent it from working, but that's what's supposed to happen. If you're looking for the equivalent of typing start X, then, yeah, you have to use like VNC or something substantially more complicated. And if you're looking to, you know, be able to type in your user ID and password as a graphical login screen, I'd say SSH is the wrong tool altogether.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.